Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
I'm on the cage, every foul wicked spirit in the host, the Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of A, on the Ooze, spread out.
On the Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into the adversarial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now on to our show.
Wow, that was kind of weird. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'm TC Downey, and with me on the line is Zach Black, my co-host. Zach, how are you?
Hey, guys.
We also got Warlock Asylum here. He made it just in time. So, welcome, man.
Hey, how you doing? How's everything, TC? Zach, how's it going?
Going pretty good here, man.
Yeah, everything's chilling. On this end of the coin, you know, so, yeah, just finishing up work and everything, so, it's been an interesting year so far.
Right on. What do you think's most fascinating about it at this point?
Well, it's definitely been, like, a lot of different events globally, some tragic and some more better, but I think the current overall in the occult world, I know a couple of weeks ago, actually recently, had a show on e-occultism. And since there's been like a lot of shifting, so the real true people in the work have been more permanent in maintaining what they're doing. And a lot of stuff is being like a little shifted out a little bit more on the bullshit end, you know, which I think is good. And more people I see a little bit more coming into being, which is good, you know. So that's been good. And you guys are on 3 days a week. That's good, you know. So it's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, man. Out of curiosity, I mean, you call into the show quite a bit, and our listeners are probably familiar with you otherwise as the guy that Jason King debated on the news. Could you just, for the sake of our audience, let them know who you are and kind of what you're about?
Okay, yeah. I'm nobody really, but, you know, I do have experience as far as like, you know, gatewalking, working with some of the Simon Economica material, been developing that with the blog page Papers in the Attic. I've been working with that a lot closely. I've also been involved with the advancement of Reiki studies for quite some time and some forms of Eastern philosophy as well, you know. And, it's been an interesting path. Some people may know me more like for the art and to the music and things of that nature, you know, but I'm sure like in reference to what TC is referring to is more people probably know me a lot through some of the Necronomicon studies, you know, like what's presented here in our debate, you know. So that's,
right.
Yeah, that was an interesting time, you know.
Was a pretty good time. And you fared very well.
It was kind of interesting with that whole deal, but how that developed pretty much. I think I had got this email from another walker. Actually, we just did an interview with him, Ben Nix, and it was on a different forum, and so he invited me over to the forum because he was just kind of getting more into the walking. And at the time I was really dealing with a lot, so I was just a little bit more upfront, a little bit blunt about it, you know. But I guess, you know, the communications, it was one way, you know. But later on, after I debated Mr. King and spoke with you guys, I said, these guys really got some light, you know what I'm saying, in them. And they really talked about some real, real good things after researching, even before the debate, you know. So that was really progressive, you know, to learn that, you know, sort of avenue to kind of increase on those aspects, you know.
Right on.
Yeah, and I also saw that we have similar views on fourth-way connection, too, and COS material. So that's good, you know. Yeah, that was good, you know.
Right on.
Yeah, King's got some pretty good insights with his book, Postmodern Satanism. I thought that was brilliant, what piece of work, you know. And it's been good. I mean, last year I was able to get out the Atlantean Necronomicon in 2010, late in 2010, which is kind of got a lot more into a lot of what we call in the gatewalking community, like the Aurilatex deities, but primarily deities that are not commonly written about, like Lamashtu or Pazuzu, Mwawa, a little bit like their histories, just in Sumerianology, period, you know. And shortly after that, I would say like about earlier this year, I kind of developed this other work called the Dark Knight of Nyarlathotep, which is more or less like a work just dealing with some principles or just, you know, just esoteric science in itself, occult science in itself, just principles, not like doctrines, rituals, and different things of that nature. So I kind of enjoyed that a lot more because it was coming from a place of being, you know, rather than like, okay, you know, this is what this is about, and here's what the author says in another book, and that sort of thing, you know. So I just wanted to just write something just straight from, you know, straight from the heart, you know.
Right. Now,
have you written any?
Zach, you're going to have to move, man. You're cutting out bad.
Okay, sorry, guys. I don't know if it's
okay.
Better. Okay, I was just asking you if, have you written any books or do you have any plans to write anything in the near future?
Well, the Dark Knight of Nyarlathotep, I think that's a real good work because it's something to me that speaks to everybody, regardless of whatever path or faith or whatever they believe in or, you know, describe themselves as. I think that's like a more penetrating work. The Atlantean Necronomicon, you know, I kind of did on the basis of some of the Aurilatex stuff. In the future, I may work with some things. I've been tossing around like a couple of ideas, you know, maybe some stuff in a more fourth way thing or maybe just a straight fiction, you know. But I'm taking like a little break from the writing for a little bit of time, you know what I'm saying, you know, other than the blogging because it's just like, you know, writing like, you know, I'm an artist, you know, with the music and everything. And in writing and working with music, it's almost like you have to get that out before you can move on to other things. You know, just even on a practical level, sometimes I was just be up just writing at night, you know. So I wanted to get those two things out, and I said I would just kind of really work more on, like, promoting that stuff and just kind of taking in more of the work in a different way, you know, like just more on just the basic day-to-day level, you know. An application. Yeah, so thanks, yeah. I've been just really been focusing on that right now, you know. And it's been interesting because there's over the past, I would say over the past year, we've been having like a few people, more people coming to gatewalking initiation. So sometimes I just listen to their experiences and listen to what they have to say on things, you know, and I find that kind of really rewarding, you know. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I got kind of bumped off of the air here. I guess Skype decided it didn't like me today. So I missed like the last 5 minutes of whatever we were talking about. But
he was just he was talking about his books and his interests and stuff like that and writing.
Right.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. Just getting more on just practical application. Just living day. You know, day to day, you know, I'm still blogging. I want to interview, you know, the staff here because they've been very kind. And they definitely, you know, you guys are putting together some good stuff. Recently, we just interviewed Donald Tyson on the blog page. So sometimes I really enjoy listening, like, to other people's perspectives because there's a lot of wisdom into that. You know, definitely people who are about their work. So I've just been kind of listening to that and just getting back more into the day-to-day mode of life, you know.
Right
on that, yeah, you know, because that's what, to me, is where the greatest ritual is at, you know, just in the day-to-day living, you know. So I've just been focused on that.
You mentioned that, word gatewalker. I'm not really familiar with what that is. Honestly, that's the first time I've ever heard that term.
Explain
to us a little bit what that is.
Gatewalking is like, it's sort of like a Kabbalistic rite, but pretty much it's a way of tapping into certain spheres of consciousness, you know, from the Kofadic tree of transformation, as we call it. So maybe for some of the readers, or like the listeners, I'll clarify that a little bit more. A lot of people generally are familiar with the Kabbalah, you know, with the 10 to 11 spheres. You have the Aeons, the fourth. So I guess that's like 13 spheres, these different spheres of consciousness that people tap into. Some people do it through meditation. Some people do it through ritual, different things. But usually, overall, the Kabbalah represents things above the earth, you know, like the spheres above the earth or the seven philosophical planets. With what we call the gatewalking with the Necronomicon, with Simon Necronomicon, let me say, rituals, there's a certain way that we tap into those spheres and ritual of consciousness with the spheres that dwell below the earth, you know. So usually an initiation is like seven gates representing seven philosophical planets, and they correspond to seven levels in the subconscious mind. And it takes one closer to get to their chthonic mind. And then from the chthonic mind, they can It's in the learning process, there's many things to learn, many correspondences, things of that nature. But what I like about it, for the most part, is that whatever you do in those gates, it's not like, oh, man, I'm in this gate and I'm into this fantasy land, you know. But it's more like it manifests in the daytime, in your day-to-day life. What you see around you will correspond to certain gates that you're in. For example, let's say like the gate of Ishtar, I can say, which... you know, a lot of people associate with the planet Venus. During that time period that the person's in that gate, a lot of emphasis into their conscious mind coming from the subconscious will be focused on love, relationships, and friendships. And it would just happen in one's day-to-day life. You know, when I walked into the Ishtar gate, when I was going through my seven gates for the first time, you know, pretty much like about a week after that, I would just coincidentally walk into people like just in New York City that I haven't seen for like maybe 10, some, you know, like anywhere from 2 to 10 years per se, people that were dear to me in my past. And, you know, it would bring out certain things. I would reflect on the relationships that I would have with these people or even family, and I would learn certain things from that, you know, about myself, about how my emotional and thought machine works, you know. So in that training process, it helps the person to be clear about, you know, who they are as a person, or how their machine works. When I say machine, like how our emotional and mental makeup works, you know, collectively. It's a little bit different for everybody, so some of the experiences are different, you know. But when the energy that a person taps into, when they tap into that sphere of consciousness in the subconscious mind, there are certain things that are in agreement. Let's say if Zach has an experience and I have an experience, it'll both be different, but in some ways it would be the same, you know.
Right.
So that's pretty much where that kind of work is at, you know. It's a very interesting path. It has a lot to do also with raising up the Kundalini energy, you know, which is very serious, you know. When I first started getting into walking, I kind of got into that. I've been walking gates now, I guess, for like about, for about 4 or 5 years. And for those who like maybe want further information on that, you can look online. You can Google Gates of Men and Gate of the Gods, because even in other schools of thought, Rosicrucians, Freemasonry, different schools of thought, they do the same thing. You know, but theirs is more of a Kabbalistic rite with the cliff off. It's more of a Kundalini rite, you know.
Right.
So it's been like a very interesting work. Before that, you know, I was kind of dealing like a lot with some mysticism, you know, and just some practical philosophy, you know. So it's been like an interesting path on that level, you know. But when I first started walking, as like with any kundalini raising, right, sometimes it could be a little bit serious or dangerous, you know, because when you walk that gate, you don't really know what's going to happen to you. Most gate walkers will tell you that. Not in a negative way, you know what I'm saying, but just in a way of how you go into the gate. You know, so some people, there's a lot of talk about there about the Necronomicon, whether it's fictional or real, you know. I'll get into that in a little bit. But I've seen some people like, oh, man, I'm the big badass, you know, I'm going to go on these gates, I'm going to control this, that, and the other, and they kind of lose sight that it's really principle. You know, these are archetypes, but they're archetypes of very, you know, strong forms of energy in the chthonic mind. And I've seen, you know, I know of cases where people have went insane, you know what I'm saying, older people, you know what I'm saying, from that. Not often, but it has happened. But usually if a person approaches it on a sub, you know, like on a level of just like, hey, I'm here to learn, you know, whatever the case may be, and to look inside themselves, then there's a lot of success in that. You know, so I just look at it like staring into the mirror of oneself on a subconscious level, you know, which I think is good. Yeah, so
it's actually really interesting. But before, yep, never mind. Shoot, they just fell off. I was about to say before we go further, there was a caller, but I guess the caller fell off. So anyway, What got you originally interested in doing this gatewalking thing? I mean, there had to be something that kind of triggered you to go, well, hey, I'm going to take the Necronomicon and, you know, I'm going to use this as an, you know, an archetype, and that archetype is something that I'm going to explore on a conscious level,
mm-hmm.
and try to gain new understanding of myself. Before you answer that, though, it looks like our caller is actually back on. So let me go ahead and bring them on the air real quick.
Okay.
Caller.
Hello?
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 Hi, you're live on the air.
I'm here in the ear.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine.
Okay. Oh, how are you doing? You're in the air.
Wow. I didn't know I was going to be on the air. I'm calling in to listen because when I started walking, I'm a new gate walker. I've been walking for over a year or maybe 2 years. And I started walking. I was listening to what you were saying about everybody experienced different things. I sure did, especially in the small case of, you know, where dealing with family. I dealt with a lot of deep stuff from the past with my family.
Mm. Okay, wow. Yeah, I guess that comes up often sometimes, you know. Yeah, I guess that comes up often sometimes, especially stuff that's buried in the subconscious. That would definitely come out, you know. A little bit later, I'll probably relate how that kind of works in Sumerian mythology a little bit, you know. So it's interesting. So I guess you just want to listen, huh?
Basically, yes. I called in to hear the show.
Okay.
All right. Well,
okay, cool.
We'll go ahead and mute her then, and you can go ahead and answer the question.
Okay. Well, I had studied like a lot of the Sumerian epics and mythologies for a long time, you know, probably, wow, maybe since since the early 90s. But, I wasn't during that time period. I think like around the Desert Storm years, I was in the military at that time. And it's interesting, going through boot camp, they had like different sort of classes or whatever the case may be. And they had these Islamic studies. Like, either I had to do that or go to the Catholic Church or the Protestant. So I said, let me go there. I'll listen to some news. So from that, when I left, that experience stayed with me. I got a little bit more into Sufism, things of that nature. And a lot of it was just pretty much like I've had like a lot of experiences with like different organizations and just reading like a lot of, you know, different texts and meeting like a lot of different people. But I had picked up the spell book. I think I was reading a discussion online and it was talking about this book and some people saying it's a hoax, some people saying it's this. So I was like, you know, let me just try this out myself. So I picked up the spell book to work with the names a little bit. But it was interesting. I had some interesting experiences with that. And then over time, I wanted to learn how to walk the gates. So I kind of did a couple of meditations, and about 2 weeks later, I met a gate walker, you know, like someone who kind of teaches how to use the system as an initiatory sort of tool. And, you know, I felt connected, like the language, like, spoke to me. You know, some people it doesn't. For me, it kind of worked where that kind of worked for me. You know, I didn't exactly know at the time kind of what I was getting myself into a little bit, you know what I'm saying, you know. But because there's definitely ordeals in any form of initiation, you know what I mean, you know. So that was pretty much the basis of it. What I kind of liked about it was that it was a little bit independent. You know, aside from the relationship that you have with the person that's mentoring you, if that is the case, you know what I'm saying, and sometimes it's not, pretty much you're your own person. You don't have to really kind of deal with the associations and different things of that nature. You know, you can still delve into other forms of science, be involved in other mystical or magical societies or whatever the case may be. So I found that, like, it was personal to me, you know, so that, you know, was about that personal relationship, not so much about an organization mediating it. You know, that attracted me a lot to gatewalking, you know. And when I started with the walking, what I began to do was I said, let me just take this text and just look at it as a template and just check this stuff out with ancient myths to see if I can find, you know, correlations, you know, and stuff like that. And with the mythology, overall, mythology, you know, it appeals to the right side of the brain. And that's the part of the brain that's closest to revealing things to the subconscious. So I knew the ancients were writing mythologies like, you know, like, take this so you can, you know, like, learn this lesson in that. You know, whatever archetype you're working with, whether it's what people call a deity, whatever, all these are like different archetypes for energies. So, you know, I kind of took that, you know, in, and that's how I got into it pretty much, you know. I think I had a love for Sumerian lore, like some people like Greek mythology, Roman mythology. I had more of an interest in Sumerian mythology. It just kind of spoke to me more. Although I wouldn't say like some of the stuff in the Necro is all Sumerian related, you know, it's more like Chaldean Babylonian. But it does, you know, it kind of leads to just the study of ancient Mesopotamia in general. And then also there was no Christian deities in Necronomicon, and that appealed to me greatly. I grew up as a Christian. Later on, when I was like in my later teens, early 20s, I left Christianity. So, you know, when I saw that, I was like, oh, man, there's no Christian deities in this at all. You know, like that kind of appealed to me a lot, you know. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I'm having a little technical difficulties over on my end, so I've only actually been back on the air a few minutes. but I think I pretty much had kind of already figured most of what you were going to say anyway. One thing I was very interested in is, you know, did you get interested in the gatewalking and everything before you had a chance to check anything else out, or was it like kind of a process of elimination, and this is, you know, Sumerian mythology is what I vibe best with?
I think it was more like the latter of what you said. It pretty much was more what I vibe best with, you know. And the mythology is an interesting reading, you know. I don't always, it kind of depends on how I feel in the day, you know what I'm saying. I just kind of like the work and the application of what happens when you're in a gate, you know, per se, more so, as well, too, now, you know, and how to relate things and to see reality, you know. So I would say it was more of the latter. I had been a part of like a lot of different organizations. I've studied a lot of things over the years, and some things I'm still affiliated with, you know. But in the process of that, I began to see a lot of things more clearly. You know, my first, I think I spoke to you, we were speaking earlier this week about fourth way material. And I remember my mentor had said that it was interesting because when I first met him, he wasn't like, I didn't read any of these books by Ouspensky or Gurdjieff in the beginning. You know, he would just kind of talk to me about, you know, certain things on an esoteric level, you know, but practical too. And later on, you know, he was like, well, you know, you can find this stuff in any school of thought, any school of thought. You know, it's just that you have to kind of get more into being, something we talked about earlier. And then from that, you can see how that school resonates in everything. You know what I mean? You know, so like there's certain things like of like LaVey material that I can read as a gatewalker, and I can look at it and be like, wow, I know exactly where this person's coming from. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Or certain information other schools of thought, you know, I can read up on and just and kind of can take it in personally from that perspective. So I think over time, it became more like, I guess you would, could say, like a process of elimination. Not so much like dissing, you know, other schools of thought or putting other schools of thought down, but it was effective for me, you know, in my experience, you know.
Right on. Right on. Well, I mean, obviously you always want to kind of take the best of the philosophy that you're studying about and leave the rest of it wayside, you know, separate the weight from it, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's kind of as a side note, because I know you're a big fan of the Sumerian mythology and everything, I'm curious as to how you feel about the ancient astronaut theory.
With Sitchin. Yeah, Zechariah Sitchin, he was a very interesting person. Like, I do give him credit for kind of bringing the Sumerian stuff to the fore with the 12th planet and everything like that. But a lot of that stuff, and unfortunately he passed recently too, you know. But a lot of that stuff, it really didn't resonate with me after I began walking. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, knowing that these are like, you know, like these deities, like Inanna, Ishtar, principles or energy, they're present here. You know what I'm saying? You know, because you can tap into them. You know, like every magician taps into some force that they don't hold in their hands. You know, let me just say it like that. You know, so I didn't, like, I read his first book, The 12th Planet, and I guess before, you know, walking and stuff, I was like, wow, this stuff is fascinating. He has it lined up with the Old Testament. But when he wrote this book called The Gods of Eden, and at the end of the book he talks about these energies, Inki, Enlil, and Ninhasar creating humanity, and then he calls their boss Yahweh, it just turned me off. Because I know the guy's background, you know, he deals with Judaic, you know, law. So I kind of thought that was like, he's still kind of tied to his own stuff a little bit. You know what I mean? That kind of broke me away from Sitchin stuff mostly, you know. But whether or not there are other energies, intelligent forces like humanity, of course, I would imagine so. You know, it's a vast universe, extremely vast universe. And it's interesting. But with Sitchin, I don't really read him too much. You know, I would suggest that people, if they're looking to get into some real straight, you know, Sumerian material, or Mesopotamian material, check out the works of Samuel Noah Kramer, you know, which is a pretty good writer. He was around, like, I guess from the earlier part of the century to like the 60s, 70s. He wrote quite a few books, and he was an archaeologist, you know, so he just uncovered a lot of text, wrote on like a lot of text. He was coming from that direction. Look into those books, you know. Rawlinson is another one, you know, another author that could be researched. But Sitchin, you know, you find yourself believing in stuff that's a little bit impractical and out of your experience. You know what I mean? So that's where I take him at. I mean, he brings a lot of attention to the epics, but because of his interpretation, it's very distorted, you know, in my opinion.
Right. All right. Well, just to kind of backtrack a little bit on what you were talking about, maybe add some clarity to the whole picture here.
Mm-hmm.
When you describe and talk about these energies, are you referring to them in the same kind of context that Jason King refers to the adversarial current, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's more like on that perspective, you know. It's like I'll give you an example of one energy is like in the Necro, they talk about the god Nergal, you know. He was the god, the ruler of Kutha, you know. One aspect of him is, let's say, the energy of anger, you know. So you experience anger, I experience anger. It's something that we both experience, but so we don't possess it. You know, we don't possess anger. But in that force is also linked to other things around us, in our environment, you know, in our own psyche. So when a person taps into that description of that sphere of consciousness, in that time that they're in that sphere, they will experience all those emotional states, thoughts, and they will see things even outside themselves and their experiences that kind of relate to how that energy works within them. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times, you know, we look at things just clearly through the five senses, which is important because that's what we're using as tools to get through the day-to-day world. But I think even Gurdjieff had mentioned this in some of his thoughts too, but the measurement of our thoughts and emotions, you know, if we limit our reality to what we just see, feel, and, you know, hear and touch, then we have to ignore our emotions and thoughts as unreal. Emotions and thoughts are real. And, you know, from my experience, the levels of occultism, you know, was a way of measuring that. You know, measuring the thought experience that one has is, you know. So in the thoughts and experience and emotions, that's also a science, a whole other science. You know, there's levels of emotions that may radiate on a certain level, like anger, happiness, and different things that they be less in some people, more in some people, and there's varying degrees of just that one energy, you know. So the spheres, or what I call gates, you know, is holds those energies with them in different qualities to a varying degree, you know. So in that,
okay.
Yeah, that kind of makes up, you know, this current that's around the world, you know, like in some all within us that's residing through us and things around us.
Well, that's, I think that's actually very fascinating. And, I mean, from a certain perspective, you could kind of almost match it up with the idea of the Enneagram personalities.
Yeah, definitely. That it has a big part to play as far as that work is concerned. You know, a very big part to play as far as that work is concerned. Because, you know, a lot of people maybe outside the, you know, the gatewalking community, you know, come on the blog page, you know, some of them may think, oh, these guys are talking about a whole bunch of hocus pocus and stuff like that. But pretty much the gate is a very personal experience. You know, when you're raising the Kundalini energy up, it's like, you know, described like a drunken and slumbered, you know, so you'll feel these experiences or these emotional states that could be out the context of your environment. You know, like you could be in a peaceful area and just suddenly feel anger. You may be meditating on a thought that may pertain to that gate, you know what I'm saying, or something. If you're in an Ishtar gate, it could be a family member. Like, why did this person do that to me, this, that, and the other? And, you know, like you get into this kind of, like, pulsive thing. But then you realize why that is coming up, you know, and you'll see how that energy works into your life. And it may give you, like, a sort of you know, a different perspective on how to look at how you operate, you know what I'm saying? And it's that Kundalini energy that we call the watcher, for the most part, you know, because that's the way to be able to see the emotions and the thoughts moving for what they are without being identified with them. But that's very difficult because we're normally identified with our thoughts and emotions, you know what I'm saying? So this is what we look at as, like, states of possession, you know.
Right. And now, this concept of gatewalking, are you the originator of this idea or just a perpetuator of it?
I'm just the perpetuator of it. Yeah, gatewalking's been around for thousands of years. You know, even if you look in the region of the world, like in Samaria, you look at Islam. Now, I'm going to say that some customs that are superstitious today may have had a basis that was useful to the people who were working with them originally. You know what I'm saying? I'll get into that a little bit later. But gatewalking, in the book, it describes like these different gates, different like sigils or seals, and the person may walk around them, he may speak in front of them. You know, it represents an aspect of the mind, the chthonic mind. And during the ritual, you know, fire is called up and raised and different things of that nature. A person tunes into that gate. But technically, the way it's described in the Simon Economicon, a person walks around the gate while saying an incantation. That's the same thing as you see in the Islamic world when Muslims perform Hajj when they're walking around the Blackstone, reading aspects of the Quran. You know, it's the same thing that you hear about, let's say, in Freemasonry, where they talk about the gate of the gods and the gates of gates of men. Gates of men starts with the zodiac sign Cancer. And what they do in certain levels of Rosicrucian Freemasonry is that they meditate to walk these philosophical planets, or what we call gates or constellations or whatever, however they term it. But they go from Cancer, which is represented by the moon, to the gate of the gods, which is Capricorn, which is ruled by Saturn. So when you look at an Economicon, it starts with a gate that's represented by the moon and ends with Saturn. Now, that information was around even before Islam. And you can verify that, like I said, if you look in the Internet under the Google search, gates of men or gates of gods, it will bring you to this, like, sort of things that these, you know, different cultures are working on, the Romans and the Greeks and different things of that nature. So, yeah, it's been around for a long time. It's been around for a long time, you know.
Now, you said gates of gods, is that correct?
Yeah, G-A-T-E-S, of, you know, G-O-D-S, and gates of men. And you kind of uncover, like, how the Chaldeans were kind of, like, into this. You know, so these were some of the things, like, when I would look at some of the stuff, a lot of gatewalkers are like this, and I always tell people that I share the system with this. When you're reading this material, don't, you know, look at it from what the outside perspective is saying. Do your own research. You know, do your own research and really dig. You know, and you'll find, like, a lot of this text, like, aside from the Mad Arab stuff, and, of course, a lot of it's written in code in some ways, but pretty much I've verified, like, 85% of it so far. You know, as far as, like, its relativeness to certain ancient practices and customs, you know. So the gatewalking ritual, to me, that was authentic because it's displayed in different schools of thought, you know.
Right on.
Yeah.
Zach, do me a favor and just pick up for a second. I got to figure out who it is that's calling in.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Warlock Asylum.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Wilhelm Reich? Or any of the works on organ energy and stuff like that?
Yeah, hold on, Ken, a second. Let me just turn you up. It's a little bit. I'm trying to catch up to you. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, brother.
Are you familiar with Wilhelm Reich and organ energy?
No, I'm not per se. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. It just a lot of stuff you're talking about kind of reminds me of some more philosophical aspects of Rankine therapy and organ energy and stuff like that. And,
oh, I see.
You know, me being mainly LaVey and saying this, I'm not, you know, I don't really specialize in ritual or magic. That's about as spiritual as I get, if you want to even call it that word.
Yeah, yes. There's a couple of walkers who, I mean, I have, you know, a lot of LaVey's works at the house. You know, I read a lot of that. And, of course, you know, I listen to the station, you know. And there's, you know, there's a couple of walkers that have shared the system with who also follow that path as well. You know, of course, their, like, perspective and how they work with it may be a little bit different than mine. You know, and that's good. You know, everyone has their own, you know, world to fulfill, you know, their own dream to accomplish. So, they take it in, like, maybe like a little bit of a different way, maybe from the aspect of theatrical magic. Hey, this is good to use, You know what I'm saying? You know, that's how they kind of take it in. And then they, you know, live on, you know, live out their philosophy, you know, live out their life, you know, whatever it is that they believe in. I've worked with people of different aspects, some Christian even. Very rarely, though. I mean, that stuff is very abhorrent to them for the most part. But sometimes that is the case. I've gotten correspondence from people in places like India, South America. Here in New York, it's in New York City, it's a big population, so it's like a lot of different people from all different groups that kind of engage in that, that I've kind of worked with, you know. So it's been interesting, you know. Yeah, it's been interesting. But what I do like about...
It's always what's cool. That's what's cool about the left-hand path, man, is it's flexible for the individual. It's not real rigid like most right-hand path philosophies, which is one thing that actually attracted me to the cult.
Yeah.
That, you know, it allows free for personal discovery and personal expression.
Yeah, that's what I like about it the most as well. It's not so much about, like you said, it's more free and, like, you know, like it's personal, you know, so... when it gets to that level, like a lot of stuff you have here in the show, you know, I get like a lot out of it, you know, and it brings up some interesting subject matter, you know. So I study the martial arts, you know, so I kind of look at it, you know, the left-hand path is kind of like that, where everyone's their own swordsman, you know, so there's different things that you can learn from a person's fighting skill, and there's certain things you can learn about the person by the way they move and fight. So I kind of look at the left-hand path as like that. Like you have one person's style may be taekwondo. Another person's style could be karate, you know. Now, are the styles better or whatever? You know, there's certain reasons why people are in the styles that they're in. You know what I'm saying? You know, sometimes people may study another style to learn maybe a better punching method or something in that case. So that's how I kind of see, like you mentioned, like the left-hand path, everyone can kind of learn you know, what they need to do for their own personal benefit, you know, and still share with others, you know, a certain common language, you know.
Right.
Right on, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I find that interesting.
All right. Well, we have another caller, somebody from a 347 number, but when I switched over to screen to find out if they were there or not, I couldn't really get a reply. So I'm going to try this again. 347, are you there?
Bueller?
No?
No, maybe there's just listening. Yeah, they could be just listening.
It could be. All right.
Yeah, because I got a couple of emails of people, when I put the post up, they said they just want to call and to listen because they might be out traveling and stuff like that, you know. So maybe it's like a listener. Yeah.
Right on. So, we've covered a lot of ground. I think it's really interesting that you have these, meta models, so to speak, that you're working off of with these different gates and stuff. I mean, I've read the Simon Necronomicon a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I was always more interested myself in the 50 names than just about everything else in the book. But
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just been working on that recently, the 50 names. I was just working with that. It's interesting because I get a little bit more into the text of the book because a lot of the language is very symbolic. But the 50 names is specifically a really deep rite because for those who are familiar with the mythology, they know about Marduk battling the beast Tiamat or whatever, and he was given 50 names by the gods. But originally I come to discover that myth, that was Babylonian. But the Sumerian myth comes from Inanna and Dumuzi, where Inanna made Dumuzi have 50 orgasms, and each orgasm was a gift, you see. So when the Babylonians, during the time period that the rise of Marduk came, it was a more patriotic rite at that era. So they kind of wrote off the goddess, and they said that these 50 names came from different gods. so they were different attributes. Now, this is kind of interesting because in ancient Mesopotamian history, the new year was celebrated in the beginning of the spring equinox. And what they would do is they would have this celebration where they would have like this whole wedding procession. Actually, the whole wedding ceremony for people who are Christians who are listening to the program actually comes from the myth of Ishtar and Dumuzi. Ishtar is the bride dressed in white. That's where brides wear white because they're imitating Ishtar. Shamash is the best man who introduces her to her husband, Dumuzi, and Enki is the one who's putting the people together. The congregation is split because it represents the walls of the vagina going through eight gates. But that's a whole other story. But getting back to what you said with the 50 names, at the spring equinox, they would have a ceremony that the king had to go through where he would sleep with, have congress with a priestess of Ishtar. And in front of a crowd of 300 people, he had to have 50 orgasms. It was a completely tantric rite. If he was unable to do so, he was unqualified to rule for the year. You know, so like those are kind of like, you can say like aspects of a gifts. But going back to like the mystical side of it, a lady showed me this picture that she had of someone in the asana position. And you can see the seven chakras. And on top, there was this large disc that had 50 Sanskrit letters. You know, so I can see that association in some aspects of that. I don't want to get too wordy with it. Sorry, Beast, but
That's fine, man. I mean, the explanation is at the very least intriguing. I'm kind of very curious about what type of actual methodology is involved in the the application of gatewalking via Warlock Asylum. Well, not necessarily what Simon was proposing, but interested in what your interpretation of it is.
Oh yeah, so. It's kind of interesting. Simon is an interesting character. I guess we covered some of that stuff during the debate with King, you know. But he does say in the introduction that it's important for the occultists to separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, he says that first off in the introduction. It's good to read the introduction. It has some pretty good notes in it. But some of the things that with these two books, Gates of Necronomicon and Dead Names, that came after the Necronomicon, some of the things were interesting. But once I read the books, I didn't really reread those books again, you know. So my perspective was more or less like you know, I kind of look at it a little bit differently, you know, I guess, than some of the things that's written. Because I think some of those things that he writes in there are blinds. You know, my methods of doing it, I do invoke the gates and some of the names through ritual. It gives me a place of, like, a peace and a little bit of time to kind of get more in tune with my own self. That's how I kind of perceive, the ritual. But throughout my day-to-day experience, you know, I find that there are some coincidences and correspondences that relate to what I'm revealed to into the gates. The rituals themselves, a lot of that is revealed in the testimony of the Mad Arab when it's read correctly, you know what I'm saying, for what it is. Like, you know, the guy says that he's standing near a rock, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's tall as a man and as wide as a bull. So if you know about the four signs of the zodiac, the man is the north, the bull is the east. So, okay, he's talking about being in the northeast. And then he lights a fire. So next thing is coming is the conjuration of the fire god, which was actually something that was done in ancient times. And then from there he sees, like, these, you know, people, these priests doing stuff in the mountains. So I guess when you call the watcher, the three great watchers will come. Okay. That's pretty much describing the Giza Necropolis. You know, Enki, Enlil, and Anu are the three great pyramids, and of course the watcher, Ki Amaterasu, is the Sphinx, Lord of the Underworld, Nergal. So that's a resurrection of that rite incorporated in conjunction with the Sumerian. And then from there you can invoke the gate. So basically you have a bowl you know, with the three sigils, and then you, you know, use a sterno, whatever the case may be, and then you kind of work with the book from that perspective a little bit. That's how I kind of work with it, you know. Sometimes I just may just, like, meditate on a name. You know, I may use that to connect with a certain energy or whatever. In the past, it's interesting. We bring something to mind because I think Dan Harms, I remember he was on the radio here, you know. And sometimes Harms hits me on the internet because he's like, you're always using those old references, you know, like in some of my blogging material and stuff like that. But I find that those things are relative. The older references to me were like a little bit more honest about certain things, you know, because before Sumeria became this, oh, they were the first civilization on Earth and all this other bullshit or nonsense or whatever. You know, people at that time was like straight up Christian world. So they were right, you know, about Sumeria, like, oh, man, these heathens and all this other kind of stuff. But they would reveal the text for what they were, and they were right in the opinion of it, you know. But that's pretty much the mythology of how I go into, like, some of the gates and things of that nature, you know.
So the actual invocation of the gate is a physical rite that you perform, and from there you, I don't know, you're participating in some kind of a,
Yeah, the incantation people actually perform and say. You know, they would say in front of fire. You know, some people use a sterno, you know what I'm saying? We kind of get more into that, like on a personal level when that information is transmitted, you know. But, yeah, they create for themselves like an agamasaratu, which is a bowl with, you know, like certain symbols on it and that they can conjure fire from. It's interesting because Dan Harms had on his page recently they found thousands of incantation bowls buried in civilizations as old as 10,000 years ago in the area of Turkey and some of the area of some of the other Islamic nations, you know, these incantation bowls in people's houses. So this was something that people did use, you know. Yeah, right. But after that, you know, you kind of go into the gate incantation. You create for yourself the sigil. It's all about whatever gets you into that place and that mindset, you know. And the thing with the incantations is that although it's not really spoken of today, but I'm sure, you know, you and Zach might be more familiar with it as well, that at one time, you know, reading was considered to be an occult science. You know what I'm saying? You know, reading words, like we take it for granted today, but one time it was considered to be an occult science. And the power in words, you know, means a lot. So we look at that as a way of tapping into that energy, or that's how I perceive it personally. When I was doing research recently, they noticed that, like, if you take a cup of water and you write a certain word on it, certain patterns will appear in the water on a microscopic level. So certain words do vibrate to certain energies, you know. In the Sumerian mythology, the atmosphere was water, you know, and the fire was what emanated from whatever deity it was. But, like, before I continue this, let me just say one thing. I think a lot of stuff with how people look at primitive people or people coming from areas of the world shamanistic today by modern science, I personally think a lot of it is like misunderstood, you know, because modern science in some ways, they want us to believe that all our ancestors were liars. Like these motherfuckers did not know what they were talking about. You know, they were just primitive. They were just superstitious people, you know, but in the schools of different forms of spirituality and shamanism, it's more of an oral thing. But the idea of worshiping a force because it was a very powerful force, like a bolt of lightning or ocean, wasn't the way Christians worship Jesus, you know, originally. Now, maybe some of the ancient priests at that time, they're doing what people are doing today, you know, making people ignorant, you know. But the priests knew that these were powerful forces, so they radiated a level of influence on the environment. And how you kind of can curve this force destructive nature was by using certain words to entreat it. it wasn't like they were worshiping it. Like, oh, man, oh, you know, like maybe in some nations they were, you know what I'm saying? But I think there was a certain consciousness behind some of the religions that knew that this is how the science is affecting us, you know, and they were able to affect certain events, you know, or curb certain things by using certain incantations and certain words, you know, because words vibrate, words have power behind them as well. And they looked at the archetype of the deity, whether it's the god of the ocean or whatever, or the lightning bolt or something, as just the force. That was the fire. So there you have the fire and the water, and you have like a great, you know, that was the beginning of alchemy, you know.
Right, Adam.
Yeah, so that's my personal experience with that, you know. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we've only got a few minutes left, and I actually had one other question that I was wanting to kind of touch on, since I'm getting a pretty good grasp of everything that you're talking about at this point.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm interested now in finding out is, would a person then have a true gait? You know, you're walking each of these gates, but, I mean, it would seem to me a combination of certain emotional influences, you know,
mm-hmm.
for each face would kind of give you the predisposed possibility of somebody having in their own lives that kind of balance already struck, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. What was that last point? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear too well. Let me just turn this up a little bit.
Sure. What I was saying was that I was thinking that with each of these gates just describing a certain combination of personality traits or a certain percentage of, I don't know, emotional and intellectual contributors and whatever, the probability would be pretty high that somebody at some point would have a gate that they resonate with fully, just as like this.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely. There are some people who are more resonate with other gates than others. You know, some people resonate more with, let's say, Ishtar. They may work more with that. But in the beginning, it is good for the initiate to walk through all of the seven gates first. But there are
I'm sorry. What I was really kind of trying to get at was if a person by default has like a home gate, you know, like for instance the Enneagram Personality Association thing, I could possibly say that I'm a number eight because that's what traits that
definitely. So, there's some people that I can see like, oh, that's Ishtar, oh, that's Marduk. You know what I'm saying? That's another individual. Like, they definitely have their personality types. Yeah, that's definitely evident. You know, some people I meet may be like an inky personality type, you know, different things on that level. Yeah, that's definitely a reality in that culture, in that world, you know. Yeah, it's definitely.
That's awesome. So we've got, somewhere around 2 minutes here. I want to thank you very much, man. This has been probably one of the most interesting shows I've had in a while.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you and Zach as well. Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry, Zach. What was that?
No, I'm done. Go ahead, man. Sorry, it's a little bit light.
I was just going to say, before we go, real quick, I started reading that PDF you sent me of your latest book. What's it, The Dark Knight of Neural Alphabet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't finished it yet. When I get back to you, I definitely will have some feedback. So.
Oh, thanks a lot. Yeah, appreciate it. I got to send a copy to Zach as well. I think he may enjoy that because it's it's interesting. Like I said, I just wanted to write in that one. I didn't want to go into too much, you know, scholarship, heady stuff, references. Just wanted to write, you know, just talk to people on that level, you know. So, yeah.
Do you want to plug your website for our listenership?
Yeah, they can check me at www.warlockasylum.wordpress.com. Papers in the Attic or warlockasylum.info.
Awesome.
Yeah. so you can check me out there. Zach, I'm going to send you an email shortly, probably sometime this weekend. So that'll be good.
Thanks again for coming out, man. And we're going to go ahead and go to the outro and end the show.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. You guys have a good evening, and I'll talk to you shortly.
Sounds good, man.
Okay. All right. Peace.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?